It's time for You Better You Bet with Nick Kostos and Ken Barkley. They bring you the betting insight, laughs, and some rants along the way.
And like, it used to be like badge of honor back in the day when I could drink like 10 beers, and I'm small. I drink 10 beers and like be like, I'm still standing, I'm good. Now, yeah. Like, I have 3 beers. And I'm like, and I'm 3 sheets to the wind.
We'll give you an edge to beat the spread and so much more.
There's been no statistic that's been more predictive than yards per attempt on offense, generating explosive passing plays. When you pass, how effective are you? How far down the field? Every Super Bowl winner basically has been great at it.
What do we call that? Wagertainment. It's You Better You Bet from BetQL.
Happy Friday. Ooh, it's happy hour on the East Coast. We're going to have a power hour coming up in an hour from now. It's Sean Morash in for Nick. Ken Barkley with me as well. Talking all things NBA draft. We're about to get to Rookie of the Year. We just kind of went on a little bit of a rant on Major League Baseball's accessibility. I do want to clear just one thing up from my rant real quickly before we move on, Ken.
Okay.
Drew in Milwaukee tweets in, at Moraz CBS, my handle, at Locky Lockerson is Ken's. Basically, synopsis is... That's the wrong word. How would you say this?
Synopsis.
Yeah, synopsis of what I had said, which was the MLB should be making this weekend baseball in America and more accessible on all platforms. Post-NBA Finals and pre-first ACL tear in NFL training camp, this is a great idea to grow the sport and expose to the younger generation. Thanks, at Moraz CBS, for the take. The only reason I wanted to bring this up is I don't want anybody thinking I'm rooting for anybody in the NFL to tear their ACL.
Oh, right. The
point I was trying to make.
There's a word for what you were being. Right, yeah, it's just.
The point, like, yeah,
over
exactly.
The top.
I was being over the top. And the point I was trying to make about the NFL tying that in is, like, as sick and as sad as that sounds, that is usually the point in time where us media talking types, radio, web streams, TV, really dig our teeth into NFL topics. Like, last year, I remember specifically.
Late July.
Right, late July. Cam Akers, for instance. Was it the ACL?
The Ravens. Everybody on the Ravens.
Right.
Ravens had like 9 injuries last year in the preseason. Yeah.
So when that all started, that becomes easy sports radio talk and fodder. So that was the
remember
point
like
I was
Teddy
trying to
Bridgewater
make.
A couple years ago.
Right.
That was like
right.
A big one. Yeah.
So the point is, when that happens in the NFL, as ugly and horrible as it is, that immediately is when people really turn their attention to, like, how does this affect the season? And NFL just totally becomes forefront of everybody's mind. And Major League Baseball basically has until, unfortunately, one of those teams gets hit with an injury for us to, you know, be talking about them a lot and already missing the boat here in week one. Facetious, I'm being told, is the word. I don't even know if that works.
That wasn't what I was. I mean, facetious.
I
like,
said it.
Kind
I,
of applies, right. But like you're not. That's not really what.
My point was, I wasn't like, yes, I can't wait for the first ACL tear in the NFL. My point was just
hyperbolic is like close. Jake brings that up, which means you were exaggerating. But you're like not exaggerating.
I'm not exaggerating. Like, I'm actually being
what
completely
true.
That's what I'm saying. See, that
flippant
is usually
almost would probably be the right word. Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, major issue injuries happen every NFL training camp, and that point in time when they start happening
insensitive.
Is when,
maybe a little
That's fine.
Right. Yeah.
That is when we turn our attention
Jerk
to the NFL.
Would
and
be
let's
another
face it. Yeah, Ken, let's be honest. You know, if it's You Better You Bet, it's me in for Nick on a day in August and somebody tears an ACL. If you think we're not doing an hour on their win total,
that's
the truth, right? I mean, right away you break
they
away
stub
from
their toe. They
could
slip falling out of the shower and be totally fine. We're still doing an hour on the win total because we got nothing else going on.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. On that note, NBA Rookie of the Year now, something to look into. Okay. Banchero obviously is going to be the favorite at plus 350. Jabari Smith plus 420. Holmgren plus 480. So on and so forth. So I'm assuming Ken's going to be a lot like me, and you're going to sprinkle change probably a couple different ways on this because one, it's why we do what we do.
Sure.
Is that it, or are you locked in on one guy specifically?
Well, I thought this would be a good exercise because I have done work on this market previously. I never bet it this early. I think because it doesn't seem worthwhile that literally we're probably 10 and a half months away from the trophy being awarded if we're lucky. And there used to be an award show for the NBA. Remember they tried to do that pre-COVID. They would have the special award show right after the finals. It would be in July. When you had MVP tickets, they made you wait till mid-July. You bet the thing in October and they made you wait 9 months. And the thing that should have been decided 3 months earlier. That
could be decided week one of the playoffs. Right.
So glad that you know, if one of the absolute silver linings of the last couple of years is that the NBA went back to announcing them in April during the first couple rounds on TNT, so you could actually just get paid faster, which was really helpful. It's 3 months. You could do a lot with that money in 3 months. So, but I do some work on this, and what I found the first time I ever took a pass at this market, which was, I actually look at what winner. Oh man, it was that long ago? 6 years ago? Jesus. Okay. Man, I'm old. Okay, so basically, here's the really, really simple way to think about Rookie of the Year in the NBA. I'm going to read you where all of the Rookies of the Year from the last 30 years were drafted. What pick?
Okay.
Just to give you an idea of, like, what should I, like, how, let's play how the game. Crazy is this award market? Like, how often do long shots win? Like, how is there a certain position that tends to win more often? That is going to be a little more murky because, like, basketball changes, obviously. But here's the pick of the last 30. Basically, I will go, yeah, how many can fit on my screen? 20.
Are you
going
to go front
whatever.
To back or back to front here?
I'll go Barnes first, who won last year. Okay. Scotty Barnes over Mobley. So, fourth, third, second, third, first, 36th. We'll get back to that one in a second. First, 11th, sixth, first, fourth, first, second, sixth, fourth, second, first, ninth, third, fifth, second, first, fifth, first. So, like, okay. If I ask you, do long shots win this award very often? What would be your answer to that?
Long shots, no.
Yeah, but right. And you could define long shot like, I guess if there was a guy who slipped a long ways, and so in the market he was priced low.
Yeah,
like I guess that would kind of make sense. But like,
basically, you're a top four pick. You're winning it, although it's kind of odd because you would think first overall would win it way more than that, than those numbers would indicate.
First does win it the most by a lot, but I agree with you that in general, the first pick, like, you would almost think it would win 80% of the time, or
right.
Like, you know, like a crazy high percentage.
No, yes, you heard the number one more.
Player.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you heard the number one more than anything, but I don't think I heard it enough.
Yeah, I mean, I can do the fuzzy math real quick. 3, 4, yeah, like about 9 of the last 25. Something like that, right. Were number one overall picks. But I just think, like concentrate your attention. And there's a really easy explanation for why this is the case, right? Concentrate your attention on the first, like, 5 to 7 players, basically. Like, that's where I would concentrate my attention and just think about the problem logically. The reason that makes sense, like, well, why would it be, like, why not a lot of 11s and 12s? Well, because you start getting into the situation of, like, where you land, right? If you go to a bad team, you're going to be a really high usage player on a bad team because they're a bad team. And if you go to a good team, you're going to be a really low usage player because they already have a lot of good players. So, like, the rookie of the year is, like, nothing to do with really who the best player is. It's just the accumulation of a ton of stats, like, your opportunity to do that, basically. So, like, you know, plenty of rookies of the year didn't end up. I mean, Michael Carter Williams won a rookie of the year. Do you think this is really the best player? Like, I mean, just not. It's usually not. Now, sometimes there's a transcendent player, like, yeah, Luka wins. Right, he was probably the best player. We're gonna look back 10 years from now, he's probably the best player in that draft. Probably gonna be like a top 20 player of all time, and he also went to a situation that was really high usage. But like, it makes a lot of sense why you would concentrate in that area. The 36, real quick, because I read that list of picks and I was like, 36th, we'll get back to that in a second. So that was when Malcolm Brogdon won. That's the first year that I started doing work on this, and he won. Do you remember why he won? Do you remember anything about that season?
I don't. I completely forgot about this.
So Bill, do you remember that season?
No.
That's not the Ben Simmons season, was it?
Ben Simmons won the year after.
No, I know, but Ben Simmons didn't win in his rookie year, technically.
Well, he was out the whole year, and he won
year. That's what I mean. Was that the year Ben Simmons was out the whole year?
Oh. Embiid only played like 45 games or something?
Okay.
Bingo. Yeah, so that's the...
And he missed the first 2 years of his career.
Oh, Simmons didn't sit the first year. Blake Griffin sat the first year, right? That's
no, and Simmons did too.
Won. Right? Okay, yeah, got it. All right,
it was
right.
A whole thing with him and Donovan and Mitchell wearing stuff that was like the fine rookie.
Right. So I was like, I'm almost positive Simmons did. But the point of Brogdon winning was that Embiid really won. And Embiid just didn't play enough games for them to like feel justified in giving him. He was in the games he played. It was not close. Embiid was the best player. So like really, and what did Embiid get drafted? Third? Is that where Embiid got drafted? Right.
But Ken, even if that's the case, you're still talking about a guy drafted 36th. Nobody else.
Well, I know, but my point would just be like that 36th has an asterisk next to it anyway, where like there's really never been a year where someone outside the top 10 actually won. Basically.
I'm just saying it's still kind of incredible despite what happened with Embiid that would still be, you know, your next best fit for rookie of the year in a year like that.
But. Right. Well, I remember that was like, I was thinking about betting into that market that year. and I didn't do like a lot of betting. And I was like, this is like so weird. Like, who's going to win? Is Embiid really going to win? He doesn't play a lot, or he's not going to end up with that many games. So it just, I remember that year, that was like the first time I started taking a passing interest in this stuff. So I think like we could probably do pretty well to streamline our conversation to the first six players, basically.
Yeah.
Like maybe bring Mathurin in at six and then like cut it there, probably.
Well, Matherin's the only buddy, it's ironic because he went six. He's the only person out of the top five that I would consider putting money on because A, the juice numbers. Number two, I think like you're talking about accumulation of stats, Sabonis gone in Indiana. I think Mathurin could be in a situation next year where he is literally just handed the ball and allowed to do whatever he wants with it for his rookie year.
Yeah, so the odds on, we'll do like, now that we just did that whole exercise, the top six picks. So Banchero is plus 350. He's the favorite. Now you could argue, like, should he, like him versus Jabari versus Holmgren versus Jaden Ivey, like who should actually be the favorite in that situation? It's kind of interesting. Like who could actually accumulate the most? I would think actually it might be Ivey, which I know is weird because Cade is there. But like that actually to me means better accumulation of statistics. Like the quality shots you're going to get with Cade as the point guard are going to be insane. Like way better than like Jalen Suggs creating your offense, for example, if you're Banchero. So Banchero's plus 350, Jabari's plus 410, Holmgren's plus 480, Ivy's plus 650, Murray, who got drafted before Ivy, obviously is 11, and Matherin's 15. Yeah, like right now, if I had to bet any of this, I think Ivy is actually like super interesting. I really do. Like they trade Grant, it's Cade and him. And like one thing about Cade that we saw last year basically is just like the quality of shot that he can create for everyone is awesome. Now, Ivy maybe needs to get a little bit better shooting, would be really helpful. And there's some questions about like, can he hit threes? Like Cade's going to get him looks that are going to be really good. Can he get them? But the door is just as open for Ivy to accumulate statistics despite Cade being there as it is for these other guys. And he's plus 650 and the other guys are lower than that. That's like a little interesting to me, would just be Ivy above all the others when really I think his situation is just as good.
And if you're looking for reasons to back an Ivy bet for offensive rookie of the year, and I thought you made a great point about accumulation of statistics and quality of that accumulation. I think there's so much of an NBA season, 82 games, when you're a rookie, that becomes A, this is the most amount of basketball you've ever played in your life. No matter what, like that when you get to the NBA, that's the most amount of games you're playing in a single year in your life, plus practices. There has to come this element of like mental engagement in your rookie year. And what I mean by that is, all right, if you're Paolo Banchero and you're having a nice rookie year, not a spectacular, a nice rookie year, the pieces are there, people like you in Orlando, but ultimately the team sucks and they're totally irrelevant. You can make this case, you're going to make that case for Oklahoma City, you're going to make that case for Houston. The reason I bring up Jaden Ivey is there is a chance if Ivy's really good and Cunningham clicks here in year two and takes, like, we could envision a world where the Pistons, things break their way. Right.
Yeah, 35, 40
and they're games. They're live where, wow, they could fight for the back end play-in tournament, right? Like, you can envision a scenario where everything goes their way, and that is just going to make Jaden Ivey more locked in and more mentally engaged in what's a very difficult mental season for any NBA rookie. To kind of, you know, be more relevant in people's eyes and give him rookie of the year votes too down the stretch and just, you know, kind of have those nights where he's just not off, where some of those other guys can have off nights. And I think that's where Jaden Ivey becomes a live play.
Sure. So I think if I look at the other picks too, it's like, it's not just that I like Ivy and I like this situation. I think he could score a ton. I think he could accumulate a lot of stats. I feel the same way about Matherin too, playing with Halliburton, like makes a ton of, like same kind of a thing, right? Like, not only does he not have to be the guy, like you don't have to be the guy to take 25 shots in a game. Like we see second fiddle guys take 25 shots in a game all the time. We just had an NBA finals where Jaylen Brown couldn't stop shooting and he was the second best player. Honestly, it happens all the time. So especially if there aren't a lot of other mouths to feed. So like it's not just that I like Ivy and I like Matherin a little bit. It's also, I look at the other players and it's like, okay, Banchero will be the player on Orlando that probably takes the most shots next year. Like that makes sense. But they're also a weird, like, by how much, though? Like, by how much will he take the most shots on the team? They're a weird team. Like, they have a lot of guys, not that need the ball or that have to take shots. They could be balanced in, like, a really odd way because of all the players and, like, how they're constructed. So, like, that's weird for them and, like, their guards and, like, how many shots their guards need to take. Remember, they still have Fultz. They still have Cole Anthony. They still have Suggs. So, like, it's a little weird. Like, how many shots really is Banchero going to take? Like, so many? Jabari Smith can't create his own shot. Has to be set up for to score. And he's playing with a guy in Jalen Green who takes a million shots. What if Jalen Green just like freezes him out a bunch? Oh, by the way, that's what happened to Jabari Smith in college. It's exactly what happened to him in college. Chet Holmgren, like, what is this going to be statistically? He could be awesome, but the statistics won't maybe reflect that he's awesome. And it's a counting stats award, basically.
And does he need a year to bulk up in the NBA and not be as technically light? So, again. So
it's just a little nitpicks with, like, these types of players, you know, like, where it's like, yeah, they can win, but, like, is Ivy really more likely to win than Jabari and Holmgren? Maybe. Is Mathurin really more likely to win than Jabari and Holmgren? Maybe. Like, Banchero, like, I get it. He will be the number one option. But, like, Jabari needs help to get stats. Like, Chet does, too.
So getting that extra juice with Ivy and Mathurin. Ken and I, not disagreeing. Both in lockstep. Okay, we talk a lot about futures on BetQL, and you better you bet. What if your future came down to the Colorado Avalanche tonight? How much would you hedge with the Lightning? An amazing parlay story next. It's You Better You Bet on the BetQL Network.